Hey legends, this week's episode of the Inside Running Podcast is proudly sponsored by the O'Keefe Challenge. The O'Keefe Challenge is a marathon, half marathon, 10K and 5K held on Sunday the 19th of April 2020. The marathon goes from Bendigo to Heathcote on the O'Keefe Rail Trail, and the other events start at different points. More about them a bit later on in the show.
Safe to say, a little bit has changed since the three of us were last chatting away on this podcast, not least of all the birth of two little bundles of stress little boy joy that we can hear now. So let me welcome
Sorry, Alex. That's my baby. Who brought the baby?
I'm Sophie Ryan. I do not have a newborn son, but I'm chatting with two golden girls of Australian athletics. Jess Stenson, mother of little young Billy. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm going well, thank you. Billy looking up here, his first Inside Running podcast experience.
Dave on the podcast. Keen. Very good. And Eloise Wellings, mother of little young Sonny, who is the baby brother of Indy. How are you, Elsie?
I'm good. We are going well. Thanks.
Awesome. Very good. Girls, our focus today is all about pregnancy, post-pregnancy, your babies, and just really looking forward to hearing where you two are at in terms of getting yourselves, looking after your bodies post-baby and getting back into training and what the goal is now. Because last time we spoke, it was July. You'd both just had that stellar 10K on the Gold Coast. you're about 487 and 488 or something, or whatever you know.
That time's actually looking pretty good at the moment for me.
your sole focus was just looking after bodies that were nurturing little humans. So now things have changed a bit, and I can't wait to ask you a few questions and share where you're at with the listeners. So let's go for it. Elsie, kick us off. We last heard from you. It was the start of July. You'd done the Gold Coast 10K. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's been Sunny's now, he will be 10 weeks on Thursday. It's been a crazy 10 weeks. It's gone really, really quick, actually. We're going really well. We're navigating again this new season. And, everyone's healthy and happy and tired but still happy. we're good. It's going well.
Fantastic. And Jess, listeners last heard from you on this podcast, I think, just before Billy was born, which was our chat, you and I, when we talked about cross training. And then, bang, there was a baby in the world.
Yeah, so Billy's coming up to 12 weeks. And, that feels like ages ago, actually, the last interview. But parenthood has been, incredible so far. Dylan and I are loving having little Billy in our lives, and he's just starting to really engage and smile back and all of those cute things. So very special.
Yeah, awesome girls. Let me ask you, how were your third trimesters? So we spoke to you in July, so you both still had July, August, September and October before giving birth in November. So that's pretty much roughly the end of the second and all of the third trimester, if my kind of rough maths is right. So yeah, how was the last part in terms of sleep, you know, and being able to sleep, the foods you could eat or couldn't eat, your comfort levels, any sickness, any injuries you might have got, challenges from day-to-day life? Yeah, hit us.
You want to go first, Jess?
Yeah, no worries. Well, go back to, so Elsie and I ran that 10K together in early July, and I think I was about 20, maybe 2 weeks pregnant or something there. At 27 weeks pregnant, Billy flipped into a breech position. So that means his head was up under my ribs. And from that point, running became very uncomfortable. I remember going for a jog that morning and was cramping like crazy. And I said to Dylan, something's not right here. And I had an obstetrician appointment that week. And, yeah, he'd flipped. And he literally didn't budge from that position until the day he was born. So I backed right off running from sort of 27, 28 weeks and did a fair bit of cross training and just reduced that. Yeah, quite a lot in the final week or two. I didn't feel too much new sickness. I had become really comfortable sleeping on my side and thought I'd never go back. But as soon as Billy was born and my stomach wasn't hurting anymore, I was straight back onto my tummy. So,
what interesting.
Yeah, I am a tummy sleeper through and through. I couldn't crack that habit. Yeah, that's my update. What were some of the other questions?
Just day-to-day life and you're just being comfortable or uncomfortable. And did you have the inflammatory pelvic stuff at the start,
pelvic
stuff in the first 14 weeks? Did that come back or anything else?
It didn't actually. Yeah, so from 14 to 18 weeks, I really couldn't run. I had that pubic symphysis pain and it was pretty intense. And then it sort of eased off quite dramatically with the rest. And so I, you know, enjoyed running again for the next 12 or so weeks, but the bladder discomfort became really tough for me. So there was that bit of cramping with Billy and breech, but also just, you know, feeling like I needed to dash to the toilet, but really I didn't. It was just a sensation. So that was probably a big feature of the third trimester for me.
Yeah, cool. And what about you, Elsie? How was your last few months, especially also with another little person at home to look after?
Yeah. The last few months, I started to get like pretty uncomfortable sleeping, and sleeping got harder and harder. Definitely up in the night snacking more often. I think I ran. I think my last sort of 30-minute run was at about 37 weeks. And then I did a couple of like sand hills jogs sort of walks. We've got these massive sand hills near where I live in Cronulla. And, there's a big group that go there a couple of times a week, and I was going along to that, but kind of waddling my way through the soft sand. And it was good because it took the pressure right off my my pelvis and just kind of saved my my core a little bit in that last few weeks, because it did. I was like getting pretty heavy in terms of how I felt in my pelvis running. So yeah.
You go. I was just going to ask you while I think of it. Did either of you wear those belts? You know those belts that go right around?
I did.
Yeah,
it's called I had the one called the Fit Splint, and it was amazing. I actually don't think that I would have run for as long as I did if I didn't have that. It just felt like, Sunny was really
secure.
Yeah, secure, and I felt comfortable. Like I wouldn't have known that I was running. That I was pregnant unless I looked down, that like it just wasn't, my belly wasn't shaking around. And it felt really comfortable having that Fit Splint. And you could change where it was on your belly as well. So as I got heavier, I kept moving it further down to support my core. And that was great. I also used some maternity compression tights as well. They were great.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, I cut you off. Did you want to add one more thing to your third trimester stuff?
You know what? I can't remember what I was going to say.
Sorry.
It'll come might be later. A bit of that this interview. Yeah. I was going to say I used like a maternity compression tights as well, and really found that to be comfortable, just having that bit of support just for walking around generally and for my cross training. So the elliptical was what I mainly used in the final 2 months, and I occasionally did some taping for that, the Elastoplast, I guess sort of a sling tape, using the kinesio tape, helped me to feel supported. But I was also in the pool a fair bit at the end, so didn't really need any extra buoyancy there.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing. Girls, how were your two births? go first, Jess.
Okay.
These are really personal questions. I do appreciate that, and you know, it's personal information. So you just disclose and keep it as general as you want. We're of course very interested, but it's also it is personal, and we just appreciate any little insight into your experience that you would like to share.
Sure. Well, Billy, as I said, didn't kind of budge. Once his head was up under my ribs, he really didn't move, and my obstetrician flagged it quite early that he had a feeling Billy wasn't going to spin. And so at 27 weeks, I sort of came to terms with the idea that I may be looking at a cesarean, which, you know, I'd been firing myself up for the natural delivery and doing a hypnobirthing course and thinking of all the strategies I might use and relating it to marathon running and whatnot. And in the end, I did have a cesarean, and he entered the world just sort of, blinking, and looked healthy and happy, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. I was, we were really happy that's how it all worked out, and I loved the experience. So naturally it was painful for a couple of weeks there. My incision really was tugging there. I mean, Dylan was lifting my legs in and out of bed. I felt quite hopeless. And, you've got your little newborn there sitting in the crib beside you, and he squeaks, and I'd go to turn, and then you almost end up in tears because you've just, contracted your abs accidentally. And so Dylan was definitely doing a lot of all of the nappy changes, and the nappies are tough at the beginning too. It's I won't go into details there, but Dylan had a bit of fun, and he was swaddling Billy, and I was just sort of doing the feeding bit early on, and then progressively started to feel better, and after about 3 or 4 weeks really started to feel good again, and felt like I was getting some strength back. But it's quite a bizarre feeling going from, obviously, with all of the running we do, and you rely so much on your core, and you're engaging it in everything you do, so suddenly not having that is quite a shock.
Yeah, like you actually forget it is major abdominal surgery.
Well, they kind of reminded me a few times that they'd cut through 7 layers, and
absolutely.
Yeah, we had some photos taken during the procedure, and a few of them really showed right in where all of the action was.
Oh, wow.
When I was they went there early on, I was like, oh, too soon. No wonder I'm sore.
Yeah. That's incredible. Elsie, how about you?
My experience was that I was actually scheduled for a cesarean because Indy was an emergency cesarean. After 13 hours of labour, she just wasn't coming down. Yeah. So I had an emergency cesarean with her, and then my obstetrician, she kind of encouraged me to go for a scheduled with Sunny. And so but then I went into labor 2 days before the due date. And so that was interesting. I was actually swimming lessons with Indy at our local leisure center. And I kind of felt like I was starting to have pretty strong contractions. And I thought, I'll just take her home and I'll lie down. Cause it happened kind of a few days before, but I laid down and they went away, and so I did that. Just had to lie down on the couch when I got home, and they weren't going anywhere. And then that, so I got up and actually packed a bag for the hospital because I hadn't done that yet. All of my really organized friends laughed.
I was going to ask if you took that.
No, I got up and waddled around packing a bag. I'm so embarrassed about this.
Did you get that?
Seriously. Yeah, and then that night, Johnny was like, you know, you can just call the hospital. And I just, I didn't want to be this serial pest because I wasn't sure. They were still sort of 15 minutes apart at that point. And I still thought, oh, these are like, you know, they could be just really strong Braxton Hicks. And so I didn't call, but I slept that night with one eye open. Every contraction, I'd kind of go, oh my gosh, yep, that's a bit stronger now. And then at 4 o'clock in the morning, I had a big one. And yeah, there was a couple of other signs that made it pretty obvious that I was in labor. And then, yeah, called the hospital and they're like, yep, you should come in. And yeah, so we had someone, a good friend of ours came over to take Indy to school and do all that, and with her. And yeah, we headed up the hospital and they called the obstetrician and she was like, we're going to put you to the front of the line. And then he was born at 9 o'clock that morning. So,
wow.
Yeah, I had a cesarean.
That's
the key point. Yeah, I still had the cesarean.
Yeah, they just
that did. Was kind of, yeah, they just did it a day early.
Was it bizarre, like having the spinal block and everything in when you were having contractions?
Yes. So I was getting the, I was in that little room, the anaesthetist room that you go in, and he was telling me all of, you know, how they have to run through all the risks.
Yeah, the spiel.
Yes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, you've got X amount of chance of, you know, being paralyzed from this. And I don't remember because it was emergency with India. I actually don't remember them saying that. I was a bit off chops at that point. But I remember thinking, this time I was like, contractions were 5 minutes apart by that point. And I was thinking, should I just have a good crack at this? But I hadn't, Johnny was outside putting the scrubs on. And so I had no one to kind of bounce my idea off. Yeah, I had no one to consult with. But anyway, before I knew it, there was a big old needle in my spine and I couldn't feel my legs anymore. So that was that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely the right decision in the end. As the obstetrician said afterwards. And so, yeah, we were just so delighted finally to have our little boy.
Mm.
And, yeah, been a pretty tough journey for us just to hold on to a pregnancy. And I think there was just a lot of relief as well during that first couple of weeks. It was pretty emotional. I'm still emotional about it now. But
so
I just the first couple of weeks is – like, okay, things are okay. There's no need to worry anymore, you know?
He's and, here.
Yeah, he's here.
Did you find out what you were having, Elsie?
No, I didn't. I actually had a feeling because of what I saw on the ultrasound. I didn't tell anyone, and I actually wasn't positive. I just thought, oh, it could have been the umbilical cord.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't completely sure, but I had a pretty good idea. And so I was like, oh, you know, I don't want to go and buy, I didn't go and buy a whole bunch of boys' stuff, but I was like, I'm pretty sure it was a boy. And Indy was convinced that it was a boy, which was really strange. So, but yeah.
Funny. Jess, did you and Dylan find out what you were having?
Yeah, we did. We couldn't help ourselves. It's funny when Billy on the scan was the size of about a poppy seed, Dylan's like, it's a boy. I was like, I don't know that. And I was like, but let's find out anyway, because otherwise, like, I could tell he was convinced, he had this gut feeling it was a boy. And it would be a bit strange, I think, thinking that throughout a whole pregnancy and then, you know, the gender being different. So it was fun knowing. Yeah, little boys had their first head-to-head on the Gold Coast, Elsie, really.
Yeah, they did.
First of maybe many races to come.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
You won from memory.
Yeah.
The post. Had the bigger belly at that point. 2 weeks ahead.
So in terms of wound, so now we sort of throw wound healing into the mix in terms of post-pregnancy recovery and certainly post-delivery recovery. So give us a rundown of the first, say, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, just in a sort of a rough nutshell of how your body felt. Definitely sort of from a sense of post-pregnancy, like hormones and all that sort of thing, but absolutely recovering from something as traumatic as, you know, cesarean births for both of you. Jess, you can go first.
Sure. Well, you're not really meant to get out of bed on the night of the surgery or the cesarean, but I just really wanted to, I think, feel my feet on the floor. I was feeling okay because you've obviously had some medications and whatnot. So I got up to brush my teeth with the nurse holding the catheter and whatnot, catheter bag on the first night, and thought, oh, that was all right. And then day two for me was really challenging. I think I'd thought I felt good, so might have said no to a few of the pain medications and then quickly realised that was a bad idea. So day two and three was really tender. And then by the time we got home, 5 days later or whatever it was, 5 days later, I went for just a little walk with the pram and Dylan. Billy, this tiny little thing in the pram, and then just started to gradually build up some walking just to the local shops along the river. And by week four, I think I'd started doing some elliptical training, and so we ended up getting some cross training equipment for home. There was an opportunity to get that a good deal. So we went for it because it means that I can pop Billy in his little cradle and get some training done at home, because after week two, Dylan went back to work. So I guess that first 2 weeks was so nice as a family hanging out. And then when Dill went back to work, got a bit more challenging. Yeah. And then by week six, yep, I think I dabbled with a jog or two. And the first jog, actually, I was on a high. I came back just buzzing. It had only been a little one. And then the second one I found tough because my calves and my adductors were so tight. I hadn't experienced that sort of DOMS before ever, I don't think, particularly my adductors. So gradually built up the jogs from there, and only at the beginning of last week, which would have been sort of week 9.5 or something, Adam's started to set me some sessions. So over Christmas and New Year's in Elliston, I did a few little, reps with Dylan for a bit of fun, but it was nothing formal. And now I'm sort of on a formal training plan and just taking each week as it comes. But, it feels hard naturally, but I've just, cleared the slate basically. It's a new fresh start, and rather than comparing to what times I could do before, it's just a matter of celebrating progress and going into everything open with an open mind, and I guess really listening to my body, because a lot of the advice and guidelines are quite generic, and you do really have to just treat yourself and your own situation as unique and go with your gut and listen to the signs.
Yeah, that's awesome. Elsie, what about you? First sort of 2, 4, 6 weeks broken down.
Yeah, the first 2 weeks, as Jess said, it's pretty brutal. You realize how serious the surgery is. And I think I made the mistake in the first, and when I had Indy, Jess, I was saying no to the pain medication, and then this time I probably went the other end of the spectrum and I was great whilst I was on endone, but as soon as I came home, just that the burning feeling you get at the stitches site, and that not able to kind of use your abdominal in any sort of fashion, and sitting up in bed or trying to get out of a seat is quite difficult. But I was really surprised in how quickly I recovered this time as opposed to last time. I thought that it would be worse because of you know, there's more scar tissue. They've cut into an area that I've already done surgery on. But this time, I think because I hadn't been through that full-blown labor for a long time, I think I recovered a lot quicker. After 10 days, I went for my first sort of walk with the pram. And then I just built up from there, was doing sort of longer walks with Johnny whilst he had about 2.5 weeks off work. And then I did doing some stairs. There's a bunch of stairs near our house. And I thought, well, if I can do this for a week without, you know, any pain, then I know that I'll be okay to start jogging on a flat, you know, flat grass. And so I did that every second day for a week. I did, you know, 5 sets of these stairs that took about a minute to get up. And that was really good. That was kind of nice just to, you know, get the heart rate up. And then I did my first sort of jog walk at 3 weeks. And I think this time I've surprised myself as well, because I think I've recovered or managed to get back into running quicker than I thought I would, because I ran so far during my – I was able to run so long during the pregnancy, and that was comfortable. That's just an anecdote, but it's just, you know, it's one of the reasons why I could get back into it, I guess. If you weren't able to run through your entire pregnancy, then obviously you've got to take it slower. It's not like an injury, but it's similar to coming back from a long time off, in that, you know, as Jess said, you get calf soreness, you get sore everywhere, and you realize how hard a sport it is. When you start back, you realize what, you know, your friends who don't run are talking about when they say running is really hard. You're like,
yeah.
I've managed to get back to some sort of a program, like a long run on Sunday and a workout with intervals on Tuesday. I went to the track this morning for the first time, so that was fun. Woo-hoo. I know.
That's a lovely segue. Keep rolling. So do you want to talk us through? I'm sure there is absolutely no such thing as typical when there's two young children or one young child in your life. But do you want to give us sort of a rough, sort of approximate, average, typical-ish Monday to Sunday training week? What it looks like at the moment?
Yep.
You keep rolling.
Okay, so do you want last week or this week?
Last week would be great, Monday to Sunday.
Okay. I'm just getting it.
Yep.
Okay, so I did 50 minutes. I'll just give you running.
Perfect.
I'll tell you cross training as well. So Monday was 50 minutes in the morning.
Yep.
And 40 minutes of cross training. I've been using the elliptical. Lifespan Fitness, I was able to get in touch with them, and they've sponsored me generously with an elliptical and a treadmill, which is cool. Treadmill's on its way, but I've been using the elliptical like a fiend. Monday, 50 minutes running in the morning, 40 minutes of elliptical, and then Tuesday was 6 times 3 minutes with 1 minute recovery. So I just jogged the recovery, and I did that on a grass field. I just kind of ran around it. It wasn't measured. It was obviously timed, but I don't know how far I was running. Then Tuesday afternoon, I do a weights, just like gym session of all my engagement exercises. Like, I'm not lifting heavy weights right now, but I'm doing, you know, some light squats just with body weight. And then Wednesday's 50 minutes run. I just do one run on a Wednesday, no cross training. Then Thursday I did 75 minutes in the morning. And then Friday was a 20-minute warm-up, 20 minutes at heart rate and a 20-minute cool down. And then Thursday, or Friday, I'll do gym again in the afternoon. And then Saturday, I did 30 minutes. Saturday's either, you know, complete rest or cross training, and I did 30 minutes of elliptical. And then Sunday is a long run. Last week I did 90 minutes.
Good on you. Farah, you're smashing it.
Well, I'm surprising myself.
That's awesome.
At how much I've been able to build back up. And I really do think it's because that I was able to run, you know, it was comfortable to run, you know, like pretty far into my pregnancy. And I feel really, I mean, I'm tired. Because obviously there's still waking up, like I'm waking up to feed, and but yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And I think my mentality right now is like, I get to do this, you know. I'm just kind of embracing the fact that I still get to do what I love to do, and that, I guess, that mantra or that, you know, I get to do this kind of attitude, is it just brings some gratitude into what I've been, you know, able to get done, and what I'm able to do in running. And yeah.
So the likes of, say, that Tuesday three minute efforts, and then on a Friday 20 minutes at heart rate, what sort of paces are you talking about in terms of, are you getting a long way under 4 minute K pace or a little bit under 4 minute
K
pace?
So I started out, I think with a 10 minute tempo, and that was at about four minute flat pace.
Yep.
And then each week I've been doing it for about 4 weeks, but raising it by 5 minutes. So I think I did 10 minutes the first week, then 15, then 15, and then I did 20. And I've done, I think I'm getting faster by about 5 seconds each week. So last week, I think I averaged 3:42s per K.
Bob, that's really good. That's really good, Robbie. Look out. Now those post-baby hormones and that blood volume. Oh, my golly. Very good. Jess, do you want to roll through a typical week for you, as, you know, typical slash approximate slash averages?
Yeah, each week progresses a fair bit. So I'll do last week as well. And it's actually not too different from Elsie's. It's funny, as you were going through, as in the structure of our week. And my mentality is the same as well. I mean, even if the body feels okay, just the logistics now are really challenging. Sort of wake up, I give Billy a feed and pump a bottle at the same time, so that whoever might be looking after him while I'm training can give him a bottle if he gets upset. And just that whole hour process before you even get out the door to train is quite a marathon in itself. And it's taken a while to get the sports bra kind of combination right to feel comfortable there.
What do you do there, Jess? Do you
double
up?
Bra-ing, I tried this morning just to go with a maternity single sports bra, and came back quickly and grabbed a crop top to
put over top. Came back.
Anyway.
Jess, after you shared that with me a few weeks back, I was like running along. I just was like, oh, I'm so grateful. I've got nothing on my chest. Like, I just had this moment going, oh, this feels so nice.
It really is the strangest feeling when you've basically lived your life with an inverted top half.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden you could give yourself a black eye if you're not careful. Yeah.
No, it is quite a strange feeling. And anyway. So I've got a good routine happening now. But on Monday of last week, I did a 60-minute elliptical in the morning, and Adam has gym on my program on a Monday and a Friday, and that is a little bit, here or there. So my gym this week was picking up Billy for a bit and doing some squats that probably lasted 5 minutes, but I'll try to get the gym work done in the weeks to come. It's just sometimes the time requirements are a bit tough. But I did a 30-minute bike that afternoon. And then on Tuesday, a nursing friend offered to walk Billy in the pram while I did my session. So I headed to West Beach and did 20-minute warm-up, and then 5 by 4-minute reps with 2 minutes of recovery. and the paces were about 3:30, and I felt like I was all out. The wind in my face, it felt so, I felt so free, and it was great to be able to stride out.
So good.
It was tough, but yeah, like I was, my breathing at the end was like I'd been running 3:15s or faster. But anyway, as I said, like each week is, yeah, hoping for a bit of progress. And then a 15-minute cool down. Just went for a walk in the afternoon. On Wednesday, I was able, the same nursing friend offered to look after Billy in the middle of the day. So I went out for a one-hour jog. That wasn't the way my program was structured, but because I had the opportunity to have someone look after Billy, I switched Wednesday and Thursday around. And then I did some cross-training on the elliptical for half an hour in the afternoon. And then on Thursday, I did an elliptical session in the morning, just a light one for 60 minutes. And then when Dylan got home from work that afternoon, I ducked out for a 30-minute jog. And then, so then he goes to training. We've kind of got this tag team thing happening at the moment. Yeah. And then on Friday, I did a 15-minute fartlek. And then nothing. And then Saturday was my rest day. And then on Sunday, jumped in with Izzy and Riley for the relief run and did 90 minutes, which was my longest run. And, yeah, it was kind of a cool milestone, the 90 minutes. That,
yeah, you really feel like you've done, you're back doing long runs when you've done 90 minutes.
Yeah, no, that I found that really satisfying. So, yeah, I guess last week was, you know, a bigger, more sort of structured week, and so I was feeling a bit tired, so I was really happy to have that rest day in there. And went and got a blood test to check the iron and whatnot, so I'll just be closely monitoring all of those, I guess, physiological factors, because obviously breastfeeding depletes your stores as well, in various ways. So
that's awesome. That's great training. One thing I've just picked up on from both of you is that sense of adaptability, just being able to go, you know, this is what was on the program, but this is what it's going to be because of logistics and the way I feel, how I potentially slept. And Elsie, it reminds me so much of Joe Pavey's book and how much she shifted after having certainly her first son and then her second, I think her second child was a daughter. But they just, I mean, it helps when the husband and the father of the children is the coach and the manager and everything, and they can pivot so quickly. But it taught me so much about how we get so stuck in our ways and just everything's got to be so concrete and rigid and this and that.
100%.
And if it's not rigid and cemented, then, you know, are we even going to be able to achieve anything? And Jo is just her ability to adapt and pivot and just be flexible and roll with it. And look how... it was, you know, just so so critical in the way that she just kept reinventing herself. It was almost like a liberating sense of training for her. Yeah. And she just got better and better and better with that mindset. It was incredible.
I 100% agree. I think that, sorry, Jess. I think, you know, if there's one thing having a baby forces you to be, it's to be flexible. And, you know, like some of yesterday, Johnny was working a 12-hour shift, so I had to get everything done that I needed to do for training before he left at 6:30 a.m. And so I was out the door at 5 a.m. And other days have looked different. I can't get out till midday or, you know, 8 o'clock at night or, you know, however it looks. But you've got to be okay with that and just go with the flow, I guess. And it's definitely liberating because, you know, you've got this – beautiful distraction and focus now for, you know, in your day-to-day life of looking after another human being, and then running kind of comes secondary to that. And then you know, when you can get your window, as I like to call it, when you get your window, you just take it. And you know, even if it means kind of switching up the days in your program, and it's gonna make absolutely no difference. I don't even second guess it now. Whereas, you know, before, like, you know, as you said, so if, like, you can get that really rigid mindset of like, oh, if I don't do everything that's written, you know, as gospel on this piece of paper, then I'm not going to achieve what I want to achieve. And it's just not, it doesn't work like that.
No.
And I think the freer you are and the more you realize that, the quicker you realize that, even when you don't have kids, you can take that mindset of like, you know, whatever you've got, whatever else you've got going on in your life, I think it's really important just to be free and confident in yourself enough to mix things up as you know, however you need to, because life gets, you know, sometimes life just gets in the way.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. And I've got a similar mindset now in that everything I can do, I celebrate, and I'm really excited, you know, just to be able to do that. I mean, you go out and cross train and try to time it with a nap, but if Billy wakes up, I jump off and I think I'll finish that at another time. Whereas I used to be such a, I guess I used to really stick to the program, you know, to the T as well. And I'd really try to get my average 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night. And if I didn't get that, I felt like I hadn't done everything I could have. And now I don't count my hours of sleep. I just, if I feel good that day, you know, I'm happy. I'm not kind of, I guess, talking myself into being tired because I've added up much or how little sleep I got. But you really do, you just feel grateful for everything you can do. It's an incredible change of perspective, and I love the mindset that I guess that I'm in now versus how I used to feel about missing a run or having to change something up.
Yeah, no, but well said.
All right, Moose and I are here to talk about this week's sponsor, the O'Keefe Challenge, a fun run both of us have done, Moose. Remember that? A few years ago, you and I did it last year.
Yeah, the year before, surely.
2 years ago did you do it? Yeah, I definitely did it last year. I'm not sure when you did it, but here we are. We're here to talk about that. It's good they're sponsored the show again because they sponsored us like way back in the early days. So we really appreciate the support of the O'Keefe Challenge. This race is coming up on Sunday, the 19th of April, 2020, which is the weekend after Easter. So eat all your chocolate and then you can burn it off the following weekend. It's a race that starts in Bendigo and finishes in Heathcote for the marathon. It's a point-to-point race, so the half marathon starts 21k out of Heathcote and then you finish in Heathcote, and there's also a 10k, a 5k and a kids event. It's on a rail trail the whole way, so nice surface. It kind of slowly goes uphill. I think there's probably one major hill in the marathon, but other than that, there's no real steep hills. It just gradually climbs over the 42k distance. So if you're around central Victoria or want to travel to that area on Easter weekend, this is the race for you. What else can you tell me, Moose, about the Ekenden Relay?
Yeah, well, Ekenden, that's that marathon distance relay. Unique and popular feature in this event, 7 team members cover the marathon distance together. Shortest leg is around 3K, longest is 11. So super accessible for all types, and encourage like your non-running mates. Say you put a team in from work or something and someone's not really making 5K, well, they can do a 3K leg. The entry is just $25 per runner, so really cheap as well.
Yeah, good team building stuff. You know, Andy Buchanan put a team in for that last year and won the whole thing, his team. Pretty competitive as well.
The first race he's ever won.
Probably. Past winners of this event, like, it's picked up some big names over the years. Last year, Virginia Maloney, who's now Virginia McCormick. She actually won the race and set a course record in the women's marathon. A bit of a connection to Bendigo there, Jin. Jamie the Beast Cook has also won it, I think, 2 or 3 times. Set the course record as well last year, I think. And Big Moose, you've won it as well. I've won the half marathon. So it's a good event to get to and do. Tell me about some prizes, Moose. A bit of cash money on the line.
Yeah, well, this is what teased Watto and I up to the race in the first place. Enjoyed it. So $250 cash for first in the marathon, $150 for second, $75 for third, and $150 for first place in the half, $75 second, $25 for third. Men and women receive equal prize money. Well, yeah, that's no question. And finisher medals for everyone for some bling.
I know last year as well, you got these cool hampers after the race as well, and bottles of wine and craft beer. I know the two boys that come third and second, they were enjoying their beers after the race, which they didn't mention there, but it's definitely something to go and try to pick up as well. Their fundraising cause this year is for the Heathcote Dementia Village Project, which raises funds for the Heathcote Dementia Village Project, obviously, which promises to be a game changer in the way they look after and care for people living with dementia. And finally, Moose, they also support some community groups. Tell me a bit about those.
Yeah, well, they man the aid station. So that's what I love about smaller events like this is every time you go through an aid station, it's normally a community group that are doing it. So they're just as they're all stoked to be out there, dress up, cheer the runners on. Local groups, they get a small donation for their services there. So keeping the funds within the town. Post-race, runners pick the most encouraging group to get the to win a prize for those for the aid station. So yeah, get on.
That's pretty cool. So if you're running the course and notice like people at checkpoint, you know, 20k were making the most noise, you tell them on the form afterwards and then they win a prize. That's good. Final details, you can sign up at theokeefe.com.au. if you're an Inside Running podcast listener, you can use the code OKCIRP10 to get 10% off your discounted entry. That doesn't include the Ekaden Relay, just the individual entries, and that's a maximum of the first 50 listeners to use that code. So thanks to the O'Keefe Challenge for supporting the Inside Running podcast.
Yep, good on you guys. Enjoy your race out there.
Girls, have you set performance-based goals for 2020? Like, we're now sort of approaching the end of January. Babies are, you know, not so teeny tiny little fresh newborns anymore. Looking ahead down the calendar or the lens of 2020, is there a race on the cards that you've put down as a comeback race, like your first race back? And further to that, have you set an A goal for, you know, has one been defined for the year, or is it literally that day-to-day proposition and week-to-week and just still in that flow of just taking it one really slow step at a time?
I'll go there if you want. So I've got some sort of A and B plans and whatnot. So there are a few races that we've penciled that could be targets, penciled in that could be targets, but Adam's, I guess, being smart with the progressions of my running training and taking each week as it comes, with the idea that if I get back to a full training load and I'm healthy and managing it okay, and then Billy's happy and healthy and thriving with sort of that as well, I really want to keep breastfeeding for as long as I can. So if my training starts to affect that, I'll readjust my goals as well. But I'm not up to that full running training load yet. So once I am, that's, I think, when we'll start to actually approach, you know, race organisers and try and lock something in. Things are all just very much ideas at the moment, and we're taking each week as it comes. But, you know, if I could run a marathon in the first half of this year and or within that Olympics qualifying window, that would be obviously – I'd be really happy with that. But at the same time, I'm reluctant to set anything in concrete because, one, I don't know how my body will go. But two, once I really put my mind to something, I sort of really invest in it, and I don't want to get into that mindset. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Nice way to put it. Elsie, what about you?
Yeah, we've got kind of a rough plan for the year. I mean, it is like, as Jess said, it's that A and B plan, you know. Like, obviously, there's the Olympic carrot still dangling there. And if, you know, if I can get myself into a position where I have an opportunity to qualify for, it'd have to be the 10K. I think the only opportunity that I have left is at Stanford, at Peyton Jordan. So if I can get myself into a position where I'm, you know, have the opportunity to race there, and then on top of that, race really, really, really well, then yeah, then that would obviously be the goal. But and then failing that, it's, you know, I know that even if that kind of doesn't work out, I'll be fit to, you know, it'll propel me, I guess, back into my racing and my running career. You know, I haven't raced since Sydney Morning Herald half marathon in 2018. So it's going to be almost 2 years since I will have raced. So, but I'm excited no matter what. I'm excited about the year ahead, no matter what the outcome of, you know, the Olympic goal is. I think there's obviously the Olympics is the Olympics. It comes around every 4 years and it's what everyone wants to do. But I think, yeah, as I said, not achieving that goal, I would, you know, potentially look at a marathon later on in the year, or and, you know, do a whole bunch of road racing and maybe even a few other track races in the European season, and plan to take the family on the journey. And I'm really keen to. One of my goals is to continue to exclusively breastfeed. So I'm not assuming that training will get in the way of that, because it didn't happen with Indy. And it was one of the things that I really worried about, and it just never happened. I was still able to keep up the milk supply that I had when I wasn't running. So, but yeah, it's just one of the things, the factors that you want to keep an eye on and make sure that you want it, because you obviously want to do the right thing in terms of that area as well. So
yeah. And Elsie, Stanford is May, is it?
Yeah, it's May 8th. So we'd probably, Johnny just got little bit of annual leave so in April, so we'd probably go over and train with the group. They're going over to Flagstaff for a few weeks in April, so we'd head over there regardless of whether I was going to race at Stanford anyway, just to kind of, you know, put my feet back in the water and get back training with the with Melbourne Track Club, and yeah, really excited about that too. And
have you been to Flagstaff, Elsie? Taking the fan
to America. I haven't, actually.
Yeah, you'll love it. So
I haven't. So it's apparently quite high, and yeah.
Yeah.
And trails are really good, and yeah.
Yeah. Is it higher than Mount Laguna?
I think it is slightly.
You can choose to run higher or
well. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Girls, thanks for being so open with that. So I know people will be logging into this or downloading this podcast just to hear what your thoughts are on the Olympics, but that answers it. So, yeah, absolutely. It's very, very open in both of your minds, but it's still very much a week-by-week proposition and seeing how everything goes. Excellent.
I think one of the most freeing things is that I've never had such little time to run such a fast time, you know, like I've always had like a really big time to prepare for such a big race or a big event. And I'm just curious just to see how, you know, how quickly I can get into shape, and just curious to see what I'm capable of there. And yeah, I think that's the most freeing thing. And I guess I'm running with no pressure right now. We've both got nothing to lose in having a crack.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's funny. We've got Synergy League. It's like a kind of like the big bash of athletics happening this Friday, and I decided that I'll do a 3K there. It's going to be a bit of a shock to the system, but I kind of love it. I feel like there's no pressure. It's like running my first marathon. Again, like I have no expectations, and whatever I do, I know it'll just be fun to be back out there. And it is fun just exploring, you know, what you can do. And
everything now, Jess, is a post Billy PB, which is a PB.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that synergy stuff? Is that that's where you all wear the different colours, isn't it?
Yeah. So there are four teams, and it's kind of a unique point scoring system. And Dylan and I are both in Team Inferno, the orange team, and just be a bit of fun, really.
Give us a bit of a rundown of that now, just, you know, briefly, for any of our SA listeners who want to get down and have a look, just a bit of a spiel, because we don't have that in Vic or New South. So, what is it?
So there are just particular events on the program. Spectators can literally be up, within a metre of the athletes. It's really engaging with the spectators out on the track in lane three or something, lane four, and, out near the throws. And yeah, you've got your four kind of bright teams, a team captain, and there's a really good, team vibe and atmosphere out there, music. And it's very family friendly. So it kicks off at 6 p.m. this Friday at the SA Athletics Stadium. And
awesome.
Yeah.
Entry's free. People just walk in and have a look.
Pay
at the door.
Can't confirm.
That's all right.
But I think the case, there may be a small fee. The information is mainly on Facebook or via the Athletics SA website.
Yeah, thanks, Jess. Girls, I've sort of done a bit of brainstorming of things, questions that I think listeners would potentially ask, or what I reckon a lot of men and women, but particularly women, would want to know. So I just want to hit you with a few of them. First one is this. What advice do you have for a new mum facing numerous setbacks as she returns to training? So she's just getting back into it, potentially soft tissue niggles or getting injuries that she's never had before, maybe bone health concerns that are associated with hormones, breastfeeding, trouble managing breastfeeding and training. So I'm thinking of let's try and help a woman out there who feels that it's almost like one step forward, three steps back, and is really struggling to be motivated and get back into her running or her training post-baby. What would you say?
You'll probably have more on this one, Elsie, with your experiences with Indy and whatnot. But all I can say is I think a proactive approach is the best way rather than sort of chasing your tail. So I think it's really important, within those first few weeks to go and see a women's health, obstetric care or physio to assess you, because that information, you can't sort of just apply the generic knowledge or information out there to yourself. You need to know what your pelvic floor is doing and what your abdominal control is like, whether your separation, whether it's coming back together or not. So I think getting that assessment done early on, and then things like checking in with your iron and I guess really monitoring how you feel as well. And if you're feeling exhausted, don't try and push too hard, because that's what you had planned for the day. Just be adaptable and really just reading your body and having a little bit of a plan that someone helps to write with you. So in our cases, we've got our coaches, but for other people, maybe just looking down and making sure they're not progressing too quickly, looking at the weeks and how you might progress just gradually to avoid injury, hopefully. Over to you, Elsie.
No, I think you've said it really well. I think it's important, crucial to have that support team in, whether it's a physio or a women's health, doctor, and having someone to kind of bounce your plan off and increase gradually. Because if you're getting sore, then it's a real sign, obviously, that you've done too much too soon. And you might want to, if it's running, if you're just solely running, you might want to, jump onto the elliptical or do some bike sessions just to take that pressure off your body whilst you get, some strength back into your muscles. Because, I mean, even now, I still feel quite soft compared to what I would normally be like if I was training, before I fell pregnant. And so, my muscles aren't back to their full strength yet. And so doing The gym stuff is pretty crucial for me right now, not, you know, to not feel or to not, you know, to kind of keep those nigglies at bay. And to be running with the correct posture and efficiency and, you know, and the correct gait. But, yeah, I think being, like, really, I guess, kind to yourself is important too, just because I think, you know, it's such a hectic time to you know, obviously having the baby is one thing, and then the first few months are so intense and emotional, and you know, there's all the hormones that are imbalanced, and yeah, I think just being really kind to yourself and keeping your expectations I guess low, and not comparing yourself to, you know, what other people are doing, and just, I guess, yeah, just gradually progressing to each, you know, each week if you can. But as I said, like, you know, progression might be being able to do a little bit more on the elliptical and not feeling sore and things like that. But, you know, your body will eventually adapt to what you give it. So take heart in that. It will eventually adapt. And I know it's really hard to believe that when you feel, you know, like your injuries or your sorenesses or your pain will never, you know, never go away, or you can't imagine them ever getting better. But your body will eventually adapt to the rest and then the training that you progressively give it, and you'll be on your way, hopefully, to whatever it is that, you know, you want to achieve in running.
Yeah, nice one. So in terms of health consultants or health professionals to have in your circle, or I think women's health physiotherapist and a really specific women's health physiotherapist keeps coming up. So in your opinion, would you say the two or three, if a woman's kind of overwhelmed with, oh my God, there's all these people I've got to see and all these, you know, appointments I've got to make and I don't know who to go to, and in your personal opinion, would you sort of say, like, women's health physio is probably the one of the most important ones to have circled in? And then would it be kind of your obstetrician gynecologist? Would it be a lactation consultant, dietitian, psychologist? Like,
I think it depends on what you're struggling with. You know, if you feel like, if you feel like you've got some space between your abdominals in your tummy, then, you know, you're probably best off seeing a physio to, you know, to get some exercises around that and get what not to do as well. And you know, but if you feel like you're struggling emotionally from the birth or how that played out, then obviously you'd want to see a psychologist and kind of talk that out. And yeah, like it really depends on the specifics that you're struggling with, but it's really important to not, you know, to reach out for help and to not think, oh, I can, you know, I can just push through this on my own, because it's actually, those people are there and they've studied that particular theme for, you know, years on years and had experience with other people. It could be sometimes a really easy fix or just one conversation that kind of turns a light bulb on and gets you on your way, and it becomes quite liberating for you.
Think too, the nutrition side of things is important. Through our sport, we've probably been exposed to a lot of advice and information, but someone who hasn't, I'd advise seeing someone who can just help you to realize what vitamins and minerals and the foods that are rich in those you need to be getting in, and quite regularly too, because when you're breastfeeding, you are losing fluid and calories. You really need to make sure you're hydrating well and you know, getting the calories in. Is like, I haven't stopped my midnight snacking habits from pregnancy yet, and I don't think I will. Like, you get up to feed and often I do just go down for a bit of a snack, and I think a dietitian or a nutritionist can probably help to give you an idea of you know, once you're getting back into training, what your extra caloric needs might be. And I think a sports doctor as well can help if you are wanting to monitor some things like your iron again, or, you know, other blood levels, and I guess to give you an idea of what the hormonal changes can lead to. So I think lower bone density is an important one for runners, but also your ability to gain muscle mass can be affected as well. So as Elsie said, you know, strengthening becomes really important. Fortunately, you've been carrying around a heavy baby in your womb for a long time, so you kind of gain strength through that. And so then when you give birth, you sort of feel quite strong because you've been carrying around the extra weight, but you do tend to lose that quite quickly.
Who's that? Is that Sunny?
That's Sunny.
Oh, he's hey, Sunny. Up. Thanks for coming on Inside Running.
They're in tune with each other, Elsie, because Billy's getting fidgety too, so I'm just going to pick him up.
All right. Actually, that's quite timely, girls. We will wrap up soon. In terms of our post-pregnancy and baby chats, I am going to leave it there. But thank you both most sincerely for being so open and honest about such a, you know, what is a very deeply personal experience. But, yeah, you both got such a wealth of knowledge in the area from personal and professional experience, and sharing it is provides such a great resource for the running community. But before we wrap up, I did want to just quickly pay our respects to Maurie Plant, who died just the other day. The boys have dropped an episode today, and they got Tim O'Shaughnessy on at the beginning of the podcast, who was a very, very good mate of Maurie Plant. And most of us know Tim O'Shaughnessy. Maurie and Tim went to school together at Xavier College. So for obvious reasons, I feel like, you know, being an old Xavierian myself through the athletics club and knowing Maurie and his sons went to Xavier and Tim, it was really nice listening to Tim talk about Maurie. And Elsie, I know you, you know, having been a member of the Melbourne Track Club for so long, would have probably had a bit to do with Maurie, and just, welcome the opportunity for you, if you'd like, to just, pay a short respect if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, it's so sad. He'll be sorely missed. I mean, everyone, he kind of lit up a room, Maurie. Like, my experiences with him was mainly in, I guess, hotel restaurants. And, you know, he'd always have a crowd around him and they were always laughing. He just had this gift at making people laugh. And I guess, I always mostly saw him when I was about to run a big race, and, you know, always, there's always nerves, obviously, when coming into a big race. And he just, having a chat with him always made you feel like it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because he just made you laugh and it was just relaxed. And he had a real gift of bringing joy to people's lives. And I remember when I broke 15 minutes for 5K for the first time, and he always showed up just randomly on the track after races, and after this particular time he came up, gave me a big bear hug, and he said, welcome to the big time. And it was just really sweet and something that I'll never forget. And we'll obviously miss his voice of the calling of Zatopek every year. And he was one of Nick Badeau's, you know, my coach's best friends. And we'll definitely leave a hole in many people's lives. And so just rest in peace, Maurie. We prayers and thoughts are with his family right now. And it was pretty sudden. Just pay respects to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was really shattered when I saw that too, and thought straight back to the 2017 London World Champs, just seeing him in the hotel lobby. And he had this way of just, I don't know, putting a bit of bounce in your step with his words. He was always really smiley, a bit cheeky, and he will be really missed by everyone. And there are some really nice tributes out there which capture his personality perfectly.
Yeah, I think it's sort of in coming full circle, and we do absolutely extend our sympathies to Maurie Plant's family and his close circle of friends. But it, from just my very external observations, seems like he just had so much to do with Sally Pearson. And then, you know, I think it's really lovely. She's announced her pregnancy. So we sort of tie it all back in, and also congratulate Sally. So sort of at a time of sadness, there is that, that happiness for Sally and her partner and the news of their expectant baby. But thanks, girls, for sharing that. And the boys have done a really nice job on their part of the podcast. And, yeah, I think it'll take a lot of time for the athletics community to come to terms with this sad news. But I know in time, you know, Australians are very good at honouring people and remembering them. And I'm sure the running community will find some special ways to do that for Maury. We might wrap that up now that we've got a few little squeaks in the background. but girls, thanks so much for coming on. It's been lovely chatting. Enjoy the rest of your days, and I'm sure we'll circle you both back in for more Inside Running podcast chats pretty soon.
Thanks, Soph. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Soph, and great to chat to you, Elsie and Sunny.
Yeah. Hi, Billy.
Thanks, girls.
This episode of the Inside Running Podcast was proudly sponsored by the O'Keefe Challenge. The O'Keefe Challenge is on Sunday, the 19th of April, 2020, the weekend after Easter. The race goes from Bendigo to Heathcote for the full marathon. There's also a half marathon, a 10K and a 5K, plus a kids event. And it's all happening on the spectacular rail trail between Bendigo and Heathcote. Thanks to them for their support, and thank you guys for listening.